From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 687, Terraform, with guest Janelle Crothers. Recorded Thursday, April 16th, 2020. Run As Radio is produced each week by Sound Thoughts LLC. For more information, visit soundthoughtsllc.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell. Thanks for listening to Run As Radio. This is my first show in May, and the first show since the pandemic really spread around the world. And in fact, if you're listening to this on Publication Day, which is on Wednesday, we're starting this Friday with a pandemic series. So a separate set of Run As episodes focused on topics for IT pros that are dealing with the pandemic and trying to keep their companies functioning and thinking about different ideas and problems. So I look forward to that. But this is my regular show, and I'm bringing back for the nth time, I don't know the actual number, my friend Janelle Crothers, who has spent the last 7 years, so since 2013 at Microsoft, currently working as an Azure customer engineer in Microsoft's customer success unit, supporting customers as they implement Azure to modernize their data centers and applications. Prior to Microsoft, she was a four-time Microsoft MVP and a self-proclaimed conference junkie, which is where we used to hang out when there was such a thing. Because there really isn't at this moment. When not thinking about technology, Janelle volunteers with guide dogs for the blind and sneaks away to read dystopian novels. How about living in one?
I know. It's totally kind of like we're living in one right now. I feel like I'm channeling some of the knowledge that I've learned from these dystopian novels.
And you and yours are fine?
Yes. Yes. We're all healthy and at home and managing.
I'm glad. And you have young children.
Yeah, yeah. I have a second grader and a third grader.
There you go. So they're now learning how to do virtual school.
Yeah, it's actually pretty hilarious watching the second grader kind of handle Zoom calls and stuff like
that.
That's
awesome.
Like, they're just going to be completely prepared for
modern life. No kidding.
Remote work and modern life and, you know, handling conference call etiquette.
It's amazing. Hey, I've got a comment off of one of your past shows, the one where we talked about containers. That was 579 mm-hmm. back in April of 2018. What a simple time it was. A mere 2 years ago. And that was a show where we dug through all sorts of configuration as code related stuff on containers and so on. This comment comes from Dan Aykroyd, who is a routine commenter. And someone I've interacted with lots of times. I listen to all the shows, I'm sure. And I think he has 5 mugs. So this will be number 6. Now I have to start keeping records of the different colors because there's 11 different colors. And this is the guy that's like on the track to have all 11.
That's funny.
So Dave says, and this guest 2 years ago, he posted it, you know, when the show was published. Thank you for another great show. Is there any chance a show is coming up around containers and changes in Windows Server 1803? Okay. That's a little unfair now because there's lots of versions since then, and around managing Windows containers using Kubernetes. At the moment, my experience with Windows containers is that they are fine to get something running in, especially it's an ASP.NET Core website being run from Visual Studio. But the challenge comes when you want to move from a self-hosted model and a testing environment over to something where there's one instance of a container is not going to be enough, and scaling across multiple containers is a requirement. And again, it's been 2 years, so maybe this is a better time to answer this question, because I've always felt like the Windows implementations for containers were behind, that if you're really serious about containers, you're working in Linux.
There's definitely, there has been truth to that, and there still is some level of truth to that.
Right.
We've definitely made a lot of inroads with Windows containers, particularly on Kubernetes and on AKS, and Windows containers are, you know, officially GA.
Right. So they are a first-class citizen now. You should be able to bat at the same level.
Right, right, exactly. The challenge actually is not so much, you know, the container itself. It's the application that you're trying to containerize.
Right.
And, you know, still, usually the applications that customers are trying to containerize on Windows have other aspects of them.
Yes.
That isn't exactly container aware, shall we say.
Yeah, they're not following the container mindset.
Yeah, so it still isn't as easy to just kind of pick that up, put it in a Windows container, and scale it, because it's not about the container not being able to scale or having more than one of the same thing.
Right.
It's about the underlying application actually understanding that that's the world it's functioning in now, where a lot of older Windows applications sort of expected, like, I'm the only one, or I'm communicating in this particular way to other things on the network, mm-hmm. and getting them to understand that when they're in a container, they're a couple layers in.
And Dave even says it's an ASP.NET core app. So in theory, he could be compiling it into a Linux container anyway.
Depending on which version of .NET Core you're using.
Absolutely.
Stuff like that.
And also, you know, what are you depending on IIS? I mean, IIS now has some features to understand that it's running in a container. So all these things have improved.
Mm-hmm. It's very specific to your app, and you tend to need to make still some more application changes than people hope to be able to make by containerizing.
So this ends up being, you've got to go back. If you're the IT guy and they're saying, just put it in a container, make it work, you've got to be interacting with the devs on this to say, listen, there's some things you need to do, or it's going to struggle.
Yeah, you might have to go back and look at the code, because they might be behaving and reacting to just the code, and what the application's doing is just going to behave a little bit differently.
For sure.
And might be expecting some things it's just not going to get from being in a container.
Yeah. And we've had this conversation a few times in different forms. It is, as was true with virtualization back in the day, it's not the same.
No.
And so you do have to think about the differences and work in within those differences.
But we've definitely made a lot of inroads, and having Windows containers, you know, be a first-class citizen mm-hmm. on Kubernetes does mean that we can support them on AKS now. And as customers kind of bring those workloads to that, we kind of keep adjusting and
right.
keep tweaking.
Well, and it was interesting to see that the IIS team actually said, okay, well, here's a flag for saying I'm in a container, and now you can, you know, write if-then code if you need to.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you're right. And it's 2 years, in some ways, it's an unfair comment, because it's 2 years on, it's gone GA, lots of new code has been written, you know, things are better. But that's also a point to bring up. It's like, if you've been ignoring containers because you only wanted to play in a Windows world, you don't need to ignore it anymore. It's better. And Dave, thanks so much for your comment. Your many comments. You've been a great supporter of the show for years. Happy to send you another mug. Pretty sure I got your email address already, so we'll loop back on that. But if you'd like a Run As Radio mug, and there are 11 different colors, write me a comment on the website at runasradio.com or on LinkedIn and Facebook, because I publish every show there, and I read the comments there as well and often respond to them. But if I read that comment on the show, I'll send you a Run As mug. If you got a Run As mug, Janelle? I'm pretty sure
don't.
I sent you a run. Well, I'll fix that. Send me an address.
I don't.
I will send you one.
I will watch the mail.
You yes. know,
it's the most, one of the most exciting things now. Waiting for the mail.
How are your package delivery rituals these days? Are you getting good at the sort of, I open the package, I empty it, then I get rid of the packaging, then I wash my hands, like that whole?
It's definitely kind of feel like you've got to have a little bit of a ritual yeah. now. And I try to only go down, like, out to get the mail, like, toward the, you know, get it all at once, so I'm not exiting the house and
multiple
in the lobby
times.
You know, a bunch of times.
I'm not that far away from setting up like a box that has a UV light inside it, so I can just drop all the, have all those things dropped in there and irradiate them for an hour.
Maybe I can talk about just having the lobby lights replaced with UV lights.
There you go.
And then just people can just get irradiated right as you come through our
Everybody's
lobby.
Sterilized now. Thanks
yes.
for playing.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're certainly getting lots and lots of deliveries. No question about that. But you're still doing your work. Obviously, Microsoft has just sent everybody working from home. But I think you worked from home for the most part anyway. You're not in Redmond.
No, I'm not in Redmond. But, you know, we do have an office here in the Bay Area that mm-hmm. I did frequent regularly, you
yeah.
know, just to kind of see people and get downtown. And, you know, it's part of our kind of daily commute. But the team that I'm on now that I switched to relatively recently is actually entirely remote.
Mm-hmm.
So working from home with that team, you know, hasn't really changed. It's just now I don't have, you know, lunch and, you know, stuff downtown in the office.
Sure. The set of meetings.
Yes. And I have more people in the house with me than I would in situations like that.
Yeah. That's the interesting part. Yes, you're working from home and you're used to working from home, but you're not used to having everyone in the house also, quote unquote, working from home.
Right. Exactly. There's a lot of juggling, and I definitely do more stuff at night or early in the morning mm-hmm. or, you know, and we are, you know, very lucky that, you know, I am on a remote team and Microsoft has been very, very supportive of all of their employees, yeah. making sure that we have enough time to, you know, get stuff done.
I do also feel super fortunate because I'm also talking to folks where it's like, nope, business is closed and I am unemployed and trying to get a job right now is impossible.
So we still have so many customers who are, ramping up, on the cloud yeah. because of this pandemic.
So they had started initiatives and now they need to finish them immediately.
Right. Or they have an initiative and now they need a lot more load.
Yeah.
Or, a lot more VMs or whatever they're running. They need more of it mm-hmm. to support people. Plus, a lot of companies are just being like, well, how do we work from home in the first place?
Yeah.
So, shifting their businesses to support more remote work. A bunch of different ways people are, thinking about their infrastructure.
Yeah. It's a very, very different approach to infrastructure. And the tooling continues to evolve. What have you guys been working on that makes infrastructure as code easier?
Surprisingly, a lot of our customers, or at least ones that I'm working with, are trying to look at using, things like Terraform, using Azure DevOps, and trying to figure out different ways of being able to, reproduce this stuff and scale it, faster. So I do a lot of Terraform these days, and a little bit of ARM still too as well. But it's kind of crazy the amount of how much I've learned to really like Terraform over the last couple months.
Well, and isn't this the new Microsoft, that it's not a Microsoft product you're talking about? It's HashiCorp.
No.
Although it's open source.
And HashiCorp's, great. And then, of course, we have, our product teams working to make sure that our provider in Terraform, it continues to evolve and support the changes that we're making in Azure. So it's, it's a big team effort to make sure that, we're useful in the open source space and letting people utilize those open source tools to do what you want to do on Azure.
Right. So what's Terraform's role?
Basically, I like to describe it as doing kind of like the rack and stack in the cloud. And that's kind of what I use it for instead of, unboxing and putting it on the racks.
I love that term. I'm stealing that. I love spinning screwdrivers and building out racking and stacking. And it's been gone for years now,
So it's kind of racking and stacking. It's just like, here's my VMs, here's my network, here's where I want, these things on here, here's how I want them to communicate, the NFGs, basically everything that you would do in ARM, you can do in Terraform. And then, and I kind of like it, I feel like I get a slightly better error message out of it, or nice. At least a better clue than I'm going to get out of ARM sometimes.
That is the voice of experience, that my measure of the quality of the product is the error message it gives me when I screw up.
Exactly. And I screw up all the time. It's like, how come? It's just kind of like, how come that didn't deploy? Oh, wrong region or wrong resource group or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's just kind of like a better troubleshooting experience. For the most part.
Now, is the language all that different from ARM, really, when you talk about how you express your configuration?
Well, it's much neater to read.
Well, no, that's important, right? That's what makes stuff manageable.
Yeah. It's just like, way less brackets. I mean, there's way less brackets now, especially with the .12 version of Terraform and stuff like that. So mm-hmm. it is easier to read. I find it easier to repeat stuff and copy and paste and borrow from other aspects, where with ARM, blocks of JSON after blocks of JSON kind of got a little tedious. Plus being able to like nest or reuse modules or create stuff and reference them, it's kind of much easier to organize.
Absolutely. And I'm going to quote T.S. Eliot there with the immature poets imitate, mature poets steal.
I steal from myself and others all the time.
All the time, right? Build on the shoulders of giants. The problem you're having has happened before. Search on it. Don't try and write it from scratch and don't put out a ticket for it. Like, the chances that you're doing a configuration completely unique in the universe is probably pretty remote.
Right. And in this way, you focus on the resources that are kind of specific to your
right.
new implementation and are able to reuse, you know, resources that you've built before, kind of over and over again and stuff like that. So it's kind of, it's really helpful there. And, you know, we have a lot of customers that, you know, need to rack and stack.
Yeah.
It's not as kind of, I guess, you know, sexy as, you know, developing the next great app or anything like that, but it's got to run somewhere.
No. And we're responsible for the care and feeding and sustainability of it, right? Running over and over again. Are you checking these Terraform scripts into some kind of source control management? Is that something you do?
I keep track of my own stuff. So
right.
on my for myself, I just use VS Code up to GitHub in most cases.
Right.
But we also have, because I don't do a lot of, you know, pipeline management for my own, you know, testing and things
sure.
that I produce, but having customers use the Terraform plugin with Azure DevOps to be able to redeploy that. We see a lot of that.
Absolutely. And I'm going to interrupt for one moment for this very important message. If keeping up with the growing amount of security patches and managing complex Microsoft in-place upgrades are becoming a pain point within your IT department, Barramundi Management Suite is the solution. The Barramundi Management Suite gives you real-time lifecycle management of all network endpoints, from classic Windows and Mac to iOS and Android devices. Barramundi software automates time-consuming tasks, including Windows migration, software installation, inventory, and backup. Whether you manage IT for a small company or a global corporation, Barramundi optimizes endpoint management, frees time for new projects, and reduces IT costs. Check out www.barramundisoftware.com to receive your Run As Radio 25% discount and info for a 30-day trial. And we're back. It's Richard Campbell. This is Run As Radio, talking to my friend Janelle Crothers, and we're talking a little bit about Terraform and this new provider for Terraform and Azure. Who wrote this? What is this?
The provider is the meat that makes what you type in Terraform become what goes in Azure, you know, what calls the API server, our API server is going to make everything into ARM on the back end, you know,
okay.
and JSON in the back end. But there is basically a translator that says, you know, this is what I'm putting in Terraform and this is what API calls it's going to make up against Azure for you.
So I'm able to use the Terraform syntax and it's on the provider is the thing doing the translation into Azure speak. So I get to live with Terraform code.
Right. One of the kind of, I think, misconceptions that comes to early users is from Terraform or any sort of mm-hmm. tool that does this is, oh, it's cloud agnostic. And it's cloud agnostic in the sense that you can use it to write against every cloud.
Right.
But you can't take what I wrote in Terraform that's going to build a network and put 3 VMs on it in Azure and just throw that code up against AWS and get the same thing. Because
right.
the constructs that they use to build that are different. The resources behind that are different.
Right.
So the provider is the language that you use to write against your destination.
But the structure is similar, the actual commands and terms are different. They're cloud specific.
Right. And when you build a VM in Azure, there might be, you know, a half a dozen variables that you need to provide,
right.
resource group, VM name, size of disk, stuff like that. And there'll be a different but similar set of parameters that you need to pass to AWS.
Yeah.
And the syntax and the providers work together to make sure you're passing the right things.
Yeah, the basic goal of I need to define a set of VMs, I need to wire them up with a network and provision them with certain resources. That's all the same goal, but the syntax is going to be different.
Right. So, and then the providers change over time because mm-hmm. the backends change over time and how you...
Yeah.
you know, refer to them just like if you log into the portal and you're like, oh, this has moved around or, you know, now it automatically creates this other thing for me that I had to pre-create before. So the provider has to evolve in order to account for those things as well. And the most recent provider, version 2, has done a lot of cleanup around, you know, stuff that has sort of, you know, just changed over time.
Right.
And, so they've taken away a lot of things that didn't work before, added in some new things, and they're making, you know, some decisions going forward about how it behaves, you know, when resources get imported and, you know, adding things like custom timeouts. And they're also while it's not implemented yet, they're setting the groundwork to change how they do resources for virtual machines and virtual machine scale sets now too.
Interesting.
So the
And presumably I could be doing AKS provisioning here too. So I could be setting up a set of containers instead of VMs. Like all of that is equally available.
Oh yeah, yeah, exactly. So there's a chunk of code to build your AKS infrastructure, which was going to take advantage of say virtual machine scale sets or virtual machines on the back end,
right?
And all of those different resources, you know, call upon each other.
How do I do this securely? Like the ability to create VMs and so forth. That's pretty powerful stuff. Though I got to roll out valuable accounts. How do I protect my account in that I don't put it into the script?
Well, there's a couple different ways to do that. I keep all of my my subscription and passwords and stuff like that mm-hmm. on a local variables file that just gets passed in from VS Code when I do a deploy.
Right.
You can do similar things with Azure DevOps. You can also look at putting things in Key Vault.
Yep.
Also starting to maybe abstract or utilize service principles a little differently. There's been a lot more integration of our managed service accounts in AKS and just in deploying things in Azure in general. So using a managed service account, which is created at the time of the resource and is basically completely unknown to you, only known by the machine that's using it,
right,
and deployed at the time, and then also will disappear when those resources go away. So you don't have to manage those accounts in the same way that you'd maybe manage, a service account on its own.
Nice. So then this whole set of scripts that I build in Terraform become just part of a pipeline.
Yeah.
And nobody's account information is there. The invoker has the privilege to run the script that then it creates a service account literally temporarily for the deployment.
Right. Particularly with AKS, it needs to have a service account, whether it's one that's created on the fly or one that you give it, in order to act in other parts of Azure on your behalf.
Right.
To create load balancing rules, to add up load balancers, depending on what you're using for, ingress, we can combine AKS with the app gateway. There's a ingress controller. That's an open source project of using our app gateway product as an ingress controller. And you need to have AKS act on those other things that are outside itself.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's all, this is part of the challenge of all of these things is not ending up hard coding that stuff. The other issue I've been running into is people cutting, pasting a lot of these configuration and code, and then some key service name changes. And you've copied that name across many different places, and you've got to go to hunt it all down.
Right. So managed service accounts, where if you can use them, mm-hmm. Is great because they're they just spin up on the fly and they exist only for that.
Only for that one particular thing. But if you're talking about a particular resource or a particular server name, are there ways to sort of create those as constants? So if I change it in one place, all scripts reflect that?
You could use variables really nicely mm-hmm. In Terraform and be able to set those and pass those in. You can also get really fancy with the way that they're generated. You can, auto-generate them or, use a prefix and then an auto-generated part. So whether you're deploying, one VM or six VMs,
right,
they all, are identifiable as part of that deployment, but different, so that you can reuse your code and maybe only have to change a couple variables,
right,
early in your pipeline. And
well, and it speaks to maturing using these technologies, right? The first few scripts are fine, but some point you end up with 100 of these things.
Yes.
And keeping them organized and managed is not a trivial problem. Like, that's just a lot of stuff.
Yeah. And with Terraform, you do have the ability to get really sort of abstract. Like, you can really build modules that are reusable, but count on you passing variables,
right,
really early on, which can affect the readability of your Terraform. So they're striking the balance between, can I open this Terraform script and understand what it's doing? Or is it so filled with auto-generated concatenations and things like that I actually have no idea what it creates? So,
I have to have three other scripts open to read this script.
Yeah. Right. There's trade-offs for both. So I try to, strike kind of a balance in the middle. Plus, you know, troubleshooting when it doesn't work, when you've done six concatenations and like took a variable from three scripts ago. Sometimes you just want to see if it builds. So I try to, you know, keep it simple where I can.
Right. Tell it down. And this is where it's interesting to see how devy this stuff is getting. It's like, okay, you know, I'm going to stub this stuff out and make it simple right now. But then I need a compiler smart enough to say, hey, you can't leave these stubs in here. You've got to be calling this from somewhere else before you deploy it.
Yeah, it just, you know, and I, you know, and I'm not a dev and I never, you know, really identify with being a dev.
Yeah.
And so for me, keeping it simple is, you know, a lot easier because now I'm just kind of like this variable added with that variable and it gets a little too crazy.
It gets nuts. But I totally see, you know, in the end, this is code you're writing.
Yeah.
It gets executed and it's part of the, you know, it beats the heck out of a Word doc. Goodness knows.
Oh, it does. It's funny. My third grader will walk by and she'll see like something kind of being built and it kind of rolls by on the screen and she'll be like, Mommy, is that code? like yep, kind of
code. Yes.
Yeah.
we're all coding to a degree. So you particularly use Terraform for the rack and stack part of this.
Yeah.
What are the other tools that sort of sit around this where Terraform sort of falls down?
I mean, you could, configuration management is not its first goal.
Right.
You know, I'm a big fan. We sometimes get customers like, I want to do everything with Terraform and right. I want to, you know, and it's just kind of like, well, you know, you're not going to be able to reach into that server for very long.
Right.
You know, to do a lot of extra configuration. So looking at a different configuration management tool that sits kind of outside of your infrastructure, you know, or outside of what you're building for a particular application deployment.
Sure.
We see customers, you know, using Ansible, using, you know, pretty much, you know, Puppet, any kind of
Ansible, Puppet, Chocolatey.
Yes, whatever works for whatever operating system you're, you know, hitting, you can throw a custom, you know, Terraform will be like, I built this machine and I passed it this custom script and this custom script sent it somewhere.
Yes.
And using that custom script to say, you know, onboard it to your, you know, Ansible or your Puppet deployment or whatever, you know, Puppet infrastructure. Mm-hmm. So that then it can be like, hi, here I am, configure me further.
Well, this is why we called it a pipeline, right? It's like, mm-hmm. Yeah, one step is the rack and stack and another step is the specific provisioning within those things.
Yes, exactly.
It makes a lot of sense. It led the, each of these tools, because I've also found that these tools overlap a lot, you know, that they'll say, oh, no, don't worry. We can set up those VMs for you as well. It's like, well, not as well as Terraform can. So I'll use Terraform for this piece and I'll use you for the next piece.
Right, exactly.
All right. And I don't want to go all the way down the stack of everything involved in building and deploying software. I'm happy to dig in just the Terraform side because it is very interesting to see how it's grown as a preferred way to do things.
Yeah. We get so many customers who are like, oh, yeah, I'd like to use Terraform. I want to start using Terraform. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're happy to, you know, support them in that journey and, you know, get them started and be able to say, like, you know, here's an example of how you can do this.
Yeah.
And the challenge with DevOps and, you know, all of this infrastructure and containers and everything kind of as code is there's not one way that's going to work for any one customer. Like,
yeah.
We can't give you, here's the guideline and the end all be all, because every customer and every team is at a different level of maturity.
Yes.
Where they need to be able to, you know, kind of fit a tool in at the time. And the tool that you start out with isn't maybe the tool that you're going to end with.
Well, without a doubt, I think that's an interesting point, that wherever you are is where you are. There's also a question of where you want to get to. You know, ARM can do this, but that's a lot of JSON. This is a much nice, when you look at this code and you need to live with this code and read this code, this is a nicer thing to read.
Yeah, it is. Though there are things, you know, things in Azure, mm-hmm. that, you know, might not allow for this. Maybe you're building a whole managed application. You know, you're going to be a service provider and
right.
You want to be able to provide a managed application. Managed applications, that whole building process of managed applications is ARM still.
Right.
So, and
tools like Lighthouse, like, so it's only certain classes of project that are going to fall into this really nicely.
Right. And because, you know, Azure is evolving and that those providers are always evolving, yeah. sometimes you find that the thing that you need to deploy in Azure doesn't actually have a Terraform provider for it yet, or it's not as mature or support, you know, a preview feature that's been added on or whatever. And you need to go ahead and, you know, plop in some ARM right inside Terraform.
Yeah, maybe just dip into a little Azure CLI there. Like, there are ways to get at stuff.
Yeah.
And it's just not going to be as neat and tidy as you may want it to be, which is, I mean, amazingly common, common truth. Because we're never doing the same thing over and over again. There's always little extra complications.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, I see that the Azure provider is in the Terraform website. Did Terraform build it or did you guys?
I'm not sure. I believe it is a joint effort.
Right. Well, it's an open source project, right? So
yeah.
that line is very blurry. There may well be some third parties that contributed to it as well.
Exactly. So, you know, is it us? Is it them? It's both.
Yeah.
You know, there's teams on both sides that rely on each other to contribute to that.
Yeah, for sure. And obviously your version 2, there's going to be more versions as new features are needed to be supported and demanded.
Right.
Yeah, more coming along.
Yeah.
So I would ask what's next for you, but I suspect you're staying home.
I am. You know, like I said, I just joined a new team
right.
a couple of months ago. So, you know, we're kind of all gearing up and figuring out how to work with each other. And, you know, our goal is to just, you know, help unblock customers. And yeah. these are, we always get, you know, interesting problems that we're trying to solve. And it's really interesting being so much more tied into open source and yeah. using open source projects, because they have a lot of good and they come with a lot of less things.
Yeah, little good. Complexities too, without a
complexities,
doubt.
Complexities, yes.
That's my polite term, because, you know, open source is its own culture, and I think we're all struggling to learn it to some degree or another.
You know, and when you come from a world where you're used to having, say, one throat to choke.
One vendor, essentially.
Yeah, one vendor. It's hard to, you know, pick all of the good that you want from open source and yeah. combine it with the good that you want from having one vendor and kind of make that sweet spot.
Yeah. No, it is a more complex world. But I also feel like this current crisis and urgency is accelerating a lot of these things. I imagine you're dealing with folks that are diving into this sort of for the first time.
Yeah, yeah. And I have a lot of customers, you kind of get the idea, it's just like, oh, well, it's because the containers have been around for like a while now. And
yeah, they're all grown up, right?
Yeah, it seems like it's almost all grown up. But there's so many customers that are still on that journey and so yeah, many sure. businesses that are still moving there. So yeah. even though it might not be new for some, it's still new for a lot of people.
Yeah, without a doubt. Well, Janelle, really fun conversation. I'm glad you and yours are doing well in this crazy time, and certainly worth people's time to study some Terraform and build repeatable processes for building systems in the cloud.
Yes.
Well, thanks so much for coming on the show.
It was a pleasure. It's always fun talking to you.
You bet. I'll get that mug out to you real soon.
That sounds great. I'm drinking a lot more coffee now, so.
Yeah, funny. And we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.